Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XorsonX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. We're here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we're celebrating the return of Damian, who you can find on Twitter at Damian Johnston. Our number one for the week is Weird Detective Number One by Frank Van Lente and Guy Villanova.
Wow.
No?
Not even close.
No, that's what it is now on Dark Horse. And our over-under for the week is old man movies. And since, you know, we're all kind of, well, they're all old men. I'm still in my 30s, so.
You could stop telling that not joke.
I can't help it, because I don't want to be lumped in there just yet. All right, so first off, Brian's going to correct me on my pronunciation.
No, I don't know about the second guy. You could be right on that one. But you called him Frank Van Lente, and it's Fred Van Lente.
Oh. Yeah, I got a microphone in my face. I'm looking at a document on my computer. I saw an F and I ran with it.
Okay.
Why did you wait until I said the second guy's name then to be like, wow?
I don't know, because you always turn the mic off in the beginning. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
I feel like I've missed something here. Oh, yeah. We also have an awesome website, reviewandroast.com, where we review movies, comic books, board games, all kinds of good stuff over there. And you can buy movie tickets, which helps you because you don't have to wait in line, and helps me because we get a little kickback. And that way, you know, we can keep this amazing podcast free the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, we'd never charge, but whatever. So, I guess...
His premium content would just be naked photos, and I'm not doing that.
Again, you mean? Weirdo? Yeah, check out Brian's Tumblr. Mansausage.tumblr.com. Actually, you probably don't want to look that up. It's probably real.
I'm looking at it right now.
Alrighty, so it's going to be something totally gross, and they're going to say that I look at it, and that's how I knew about it. So, let's start that rumor. Yeah, so I
it's a thing.
Well, I can clarify that it's not my thing.
Are you sure?
Well, sure. The most recent post is a raccoon playing with an abacus. So I think
that's kind of neat.
That's pretty good, actually.
Is it like real or is it like a cartoon? You said cartoon, didn't you?
No, it's real.
Oh,
that's pretty good. Oh, and I want to subscribe to their newsletter.
Yeah. All right, there you go. All right, sorry.
No.
I had to look.
Well, hey, no one has to look now. We all know. Although I'll probably look later.
So, Damian, how was your trade show last weekend?
It was really good. It was crazy. It was at Seattle Center 2 days or 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And the first, actually, we were there Friday too for setup. The first day we spent 7.5 hours building our booth, which was crazy. I expected it to take maybe 2 hours. Missed my friend's engagement barbecue. He was very upset with me. Still is, probably. Spent the next 2 days selling and talking with people and meeting stuff, and it was during Pride weekend, and that's where the Pride festivities kind of culminate, is at Seattle Center. So it was crazy down there. So many people, naked people running through our international fountain.
Well, I like that.
It was great. It was super awesome place to be, but it was also a crowd of thousands and thousands of people, so I don't always love crowds so much, but it was a lot of fun.
Did it work out to your benefit having so many people there?
Not really. It's the first one, so I really didn't have any frame of reference. I mean, to me, it was great. I mean, we made decent money. By we, I mean the shop, you know, that I run.
Right.
We made decent money every day. This wholesale day, I ended up selling stuff to people in Seattle and Portland, and we spent the day to day just putting together wholesale orders. It was really fun. But then everyone that was there that I'd known already at the Urban Craft Uprising, as it's called, had said that it was a really kind of quiet year. And they think Pride Weekend had something to do with it, just because a lot of people didn't want to go inside and, like, buy shit. They just wanted to, like, be outside among the people. And I don't blame them. But I had a blast. So we're going to do it again for the Christmas time show, which apparently is just bananas.
So is this like a corporate thing, or is it just kind of like a community thing?
No, it's just a community thing. It's the there's a shop in Seattle called Schmancy, and people that work there run it every year. So they just get together, independent designers and craft people, and you get to set up a little booth and sell stuff. And there's people that sell clothes. There's people that sell like mustard that like they make.
I'm into mustard.
There's the mustard guys are awesome. They had like this curry mustard that was so good. There's like a guy that makes his own soda jerk. Just you know, anything handmade. It can be food, it can be clothing, it can be crafts, toys, books. You know, anything. It's just kind of all sort of. It's a huge marketplace, and the only thing is it all has to be handmade. Is the only kind of prerequisite.
So
I mean,
like,
Amazon was there. They had their little like Amazon handmade, which is kind of like their version of Etsy. They're trying to pimp.
I was just gonna say, so it was kind of like a big, almost like an Etsy festival.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, definitely from. Etsy is a good way to describe it to people that might not have seen it like that. It's definitely that type of thing. Yeah, everyone that worked at Amazon came over and bought a shirt for me too, which is great.
Oh, nice.
And they're all really cute girls, which also helped.
It's even better.
Yeah.
Did they any of them ask for my phone number? Did you? Because you told me you were on the show, right?
Yeah, I think they did. It seemed awkward, so I held back. But I told them to listen to the podcast, and you'll be glad to say it over the air.
Nice. Maybe next week.
All right.
So now, are you guys like tight with Amazon now?
No, but I did apply to sell our stuff on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
I guess it is almost exactly like Etsy. Like you make all the money from selling, you just give them like a, you know, 3% commission or something. But then whatever you sell pops up in Amazon's search.
Nice.
Which has basically become the Google for shit you don't need. You know. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I use it for everything. Like. What is that book called? Look at Amazon, because it exists there in some form, you know? So.
Right, yeah. It's actually how I bought the number one today.
From Amazon?
Yeah.
From Comixology or from Amazon?
Well, Amazon owns Comixology. So I buy it there, and it gets sent right to my Kindle. I come home and I read it. It's waiting for me. I had to charge my Kindle, though, so. Nailed it.
Sweet. Speaking of Pride Week, I guess it's sort of related. Has anyone watched that show Sense8 on Netflix?
Nope.
I have not.
Oh, okay. I was just curious because it's the Wachowskis and J. Michael Straczynski's new show. I was listening to a podcast with J. Michael Straczynski last night on the way home, and they were talking at length about the show, and I ended up watching a little bit of it last night, and there seems to be a pretty heavy Pride influence on the show, at least on one of the characters, and now there's coffee everywhere. Awesome. Everybody needed to know that. I was just curious, because I remember when it came out, a lot of people were bashing it, but
why?
I guess it's kind of caught on. Because it is really... It's the kind of show you really have to follow. It doesn't give you any leeway in terms of spelling things out for you. It's about 8 people that live in different parts of the globe that suddenly become aware of one another. Like, when something significant is happening to one person, like one guy, there's a Chicago cop, there's a transgender woman blogger in San Francisco, there's an actor in like Mexico City, a banker in Seoul, Korea, a DJ in London, and then like this safe cracker in Germany. Whenever they're doing something significant, like there's a part where the Chicago cop is like chasing down like a murder suspect or something like that, and the girl in London just sitting there, and all of a sudden not only can she hear the sirens in her head, but she can sort of in a blurry way see what's going on. And that's kind of like how these people become aware of one another through it kind of hinted towards like the whole DMT extrasensory type of angle, which is kind of neat. But
DMT like the drug? DMT?
Yeah, Joe Rogan talked about the whole with the third eye and everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's apparently these 8 people, like their third eye like fully awakens, and they're the only 8 people on the planet, and there's some weird angel that kind of is the cause of it, but again, like nothing is spelled out for you in any sort of way in the first episode. You're just made aware of these 8 people, and then it just kind of ends. And they were talking about the reason why people hated it was because critics got the first 3 episodes for screeners, And by the end of the third episode, they're like, well, this is stupid. It doesn't make any sense. So all these critics bashed it, but then all these people went and watched the whole thing, and they're like, yeah, if you watch the first three episodes, it is stupid because it doesn't make any sense. But if you sit through all 12, slowly but surely, things start to make sense and things start to connect, and you're like, oh, I remember that. And then it ends up paying off big if you stick with it. So I was like, okay, I want to watch this now.
Oh, I kind of want to watch it too. Yeah, that's weird when they give you just a little bit of something and expect you to, like, form a full opinion about it. I mean, we do that with, you know, number ones and stuff. That's like getting a pizza and someone being like, you know, you like pizza? Here, drink this entire cup of sauce. Huh? Like, you know, kind of want it all together. That's kind of the, I guess for Netflix, that's kind of the thing, is you get it all at once. So you can't just sit there and watch, like, 22 hours of TV if you want.
Yeah, I guess, like, after people decided to just go and finish the whole season, all these people are like, I don't understand what critics hate about this. This show's amazing. And then all these critics, some of these critics went back and finished it, and they're like, oh my God, this actually is really good. And then some of the other critics, like, wrote to the people involved and said, do you mind if we have a do-over on our review? Because, yeah, the show is actually a lot better than we first thought. And they're like, if you really want, but it's kind of like 8 months too late now.
You guys already fucked us.
I guess initially it did, but then over time, because the show has such a global cast, the show exploded everywhere outside the States. And then eventually in the States, it kind of blew up too. It's like the number two show on Netflix. I think House of Cards is like number one, or Daredevil. I think Sense8's like two or three. And it wasn't in the beginning. I guess in the beginning was looking pretty grim for a second season, and now they're talking maybe 3, 4, 5 seasons of this.
Huh. Well, that's cool. I will check it out. I've been looking for something new on Netflix, since that's going to be my only television tomorrow.
Yay!
Finally getting rid of cable.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Comcast is the worst.
You know what? Oddly enough, back to Overwatch for a second. Apparently, Comcast users, Comcast itself has been being hacked, and people who have Comcast are getting booted and not connecting to Overwatch very well.
Lame.
Yeah.
Man, if I played Overwatch, I'd be super bummed.
If you had Comcast,
and yeah. If I had Comcast. I was also going to say, too, Amazon Prime has Trumbo now, which rules, because that movie was amazing.
Trumbo? Oh, I heard of that movie.
Yeah, the one with Bryan Cranston where he plays Dalton Trumbo, and they go through the whole communist menace hearings in Congress, and all these screenwriters ended up in jail.
That's right.
If you were curious and weren't aware of Bryan Cranston, he's really good.
I have heard that from all the Malcolm in the Middle crowd. They love that guy.
I actually heard it from the Power Rangers crowd, but, you know, Malcolm in the Middle, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, same thing.
Yeah. Man of many hats.
Yes.
Yeah. No, he's awesome. He's a great guy.
Then you would probably like Trumbo, because it's pretty exceptional.
Excellent. I will check it out.
All right. So, any other pertinent news before we move on to the number one here?
That was my excitement for the week, was a new show and a movie. Everything else was pretty much a long drive home and swamp ass when I got there.
Yeah.
That's fucking...
I have the worst car when it comes to summer driving ever invented.
It's like leather seats?
Yep. And they're not even real leather. They're like super fake Walmart leather.
So it's like all the negative parts of leather?
Exactly. Like, I have heated seats, which is great in the winter, but they didn't give me cooled seats for the summer, so instead I just get... Like, I sweat so bad on the way
home. Leather seats suck because you freeze your ass in the winter and then you you burn your ass in the summer.
Yeah. I sweat so badly on the way home, it's disgusting. So, ladies, just letting you know, I am available.
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
Who wants to go to Aldi?
I don't know. I don't have that problem.
Aldi?
No, either problem. I have heated seats for the winter and, like, air conditioning in the summer.
My air conditioning is embarrassingly bad.
That's why you need to get it refilled. It doesn't last forever.
I don't use it that much.
Because it doesn't work. If it was putting frost on the dashboard like it's supposed to, you'd be using it.
Well, now I feel bad about my life.
I would, too. So, moving on. Unless anyone's got any other awesomeness for the week, we can just bring this into the number one, I guess.
Yeah, we can do that.
Alrighty, well, like I said earlier, the number one for the week was Weird Detective by Fred Van Lente and Guy Villanova on Dark Horse. Pronunciation might be correct. This was Damien's pick, so if you would like to take it away, be my guest.
Okay, well, I inadvertently apparently ended my Lovecraft moratorium by picking this, because I didn't realize what I was picking exactly, but... it's because I thought it was going to be, just because it's called Weird Detective and it kind of has that old sort of like EC kind of crime comics look, I thought it was going to be a little bit more crime, even though I should have known from the cover has a guy with a like a Cthulhu shadow behind him. But I, you know, it's a, let's see, how should I try to quickly explain it without giving anything away? I guess I'd say it's kind of a like H.P. Lovecraft meets like Starman, the movie with Jeff Bridges, meets like maybe Lethal Weapon or something. It's this, I mean, I know that's making it sound a lot goofier than I think it's supposed to be. And I did enjoy it for certain things, but I thought it was like, it kind of, it was like a sillier take on all of that stuff, on like the sort of existential crime horror thing. Like, it's not particularly, even though it's very dark, it's not dark, really. yeah, so I guess without, I would say, gosh, how do I sum it up without, without giving away and without calling it Starman again? I guess I just, I would tell people that it starts with a crazy crime that happens in a public pool. I wouldn't say a crime happens in a pool, but there is a evidence that shows up in a pool that's really, really strange, and the cops are called in. They sort of call this one cop in who's this like sort of super specialist guy, and you realize he is then also the narrator of the comic, and you find out there's something really strange about him, and the common explanation that not only he but the other sort of Greek chorus of cops give is that he's Canadian, which I appreciate that being from Seattle. And he's paired with sort of a more female cop who sort of has issues at home with her wife and raising a young kid, and she's kind of hired to get on this job to sort of keep an eye on this sort of weirdo super cop. And I don't know, craziness ensues. How's that?
I like
good.
It.
It's pretty good. The other thing I would say about his partner is she gets paired with him because she apparently blew the whistle on some activity or people, and she's kind of been downgraded.
Oh, right, yes, it's punishment for her.
Yeah, it was pretty much like this guy was a below-average detective for the longest time, barely pulling his weight, and then all of a sudden, he's like super cop, but he's been assigned to, well, I forget what they call it, like bargain, like basement files or something like that. And they're like, well, you're the whistleblower and everyone hates you, so now you have to follow him around as, yeah.
Figure out why he's so good all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of definitely an X-Files vibe in that way. Like, I don't think Scully had the same sort of issues, but she was definitely brought on initially to keep an eye on Mulder, and I feel like there's kind of a similarity there.
She kind of reminded me of, oh my god, what is her name? From the Batman comics. She's kind of a more recent character. Montoya? Renee Montoya? Does that sound right?
I don't know.
No, I have no idea.
I think it's Montoya. Anyway. She kind of reminds me of that. I don't know how to explain it other than to say that I thoroughly enjoyed this. Like, from start to finish. I like the whole way he kind of hinted at that he had more senses than the average person, and just the way he kind of broke down how, you know, humans think they have five senses, but smell and touch are, or smell and taste are an extension of touch, which means you only have three, so be glad you have that. And, you know, my race has 17, and it takes like a good three quarters of the book before you find out what he actually is and what happened that made him so perceptive of everything around him, which is kind of one of those. It kind of gave me a Twilight Zone sort of vibe.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
A little Twilight Zone, a little. Maybe Constantine, a little bit. Maybe just the look of the character.
It's definitely, it feels like an amalgam of a bunch of different kinds of things. Like, so, I mean, maybe we've seen elements of it before, but it's a really interesting combination, especially for me in the Lovecraft world. Like, usually Lovecraft world's about a cop who's in over their head because they're dealing with, you know, massive elder gods who can't wait to, for some reason, make humans crazy. And this is like, this is weird. This is almost like the character kind of has an edge on those things.
Especially the dude that gets flushed down the toilet.
Oh, yeah, that was fucked up.
That was fucking awesome.
Yeah, and there's that whole weird angle with, like, the mob bosses and, like, the mob families. It set itself up to be, you know, layered. It's just, I don't know, it's cool. I guess there's some, like, maybe even, like, True Detective moments in there. I don't know.
I agree with that.
I haven't seen it.
I think I really liked about it is that none of the segments of the story felt rushed. Everything felt like it was taken with the same amount of
care.
I mean, I guess for lack of better terminology, it didn't feel like, you know, they were in the car and then they were at the crime scene and then they fast forward to her stalking him, but it's only like two panels, and then they cut back to the next morning and they're in the office going, man, did you guys see that ball game last night? Like, everything feels important.
Right.
Which I sometimes feel like some comics tend to forget to do. I mean, it did help.
Like last week's number one.
Yeah, last week was a perfect example. A 64-page comic where, like you said, like five pages of Batman sewing his, you know, favorite
socks.
Jacket. Yeah, he's like, oh, my dinner jacket has a rip. You're like, nine panels for that? That's weird.
They had to focus in on the cross stitching.
Master Bruce, what are you doing? I'm working on my correspondences.
The conversations
were really strange.
We're exaggerating, but I mean, it was such a
dud.
Yeah, it was a dud. Kind of a dud. Whereas this, every time it, like, switched gears, if he's not, you know, having an awkward conversation with his partner in the car where she's saying things and he's replying in such a way where he seems like a complete weirdo, where in essence, you come to find out why he's replying the way he is, because he's got to push this whole Canadian thing, which really...
kind of funny.
Super. It gets funnier as it goes on.
Yeah, when he actually explains that he's Canadian, you're like, oh, God.
Why are you being so weird? I'm Canadian.
Like, he's come to accept that that's what weird is.
Yeah.
Not to mention he goes through all these, like, narrative sections where he's talking about how his race has advanced beyond hatred of different types of races, for example, different lifestyles, different cultures. All these things that his culture has done that is so far advanced beyond humans, and yet when they're in the car, they're unable to communicate on a, like, equal plane because he's trying so hard to mask his true identity. Which, I mean, realistically, there's no way for her to ever find out unless all of a sudden tentacles come flying out of his eyeballs. Which would be kind of hilarious. But maybe that's later. And then there's the talking cat, which I'm assuming is not actually talking.
It's not. You can. It's.
I know the cat's not actually moving its mouth and being like, "Hey, what's going on?"
They're communicating telepathically.
It's still. Oh my God! Fine. So they're communicating. So, in a generic sense, there's a talking cat. It's talking to him.
Right.
Via brainwaves.
Yeah. Correct. It may sound like we've given a lot away here, but we really haven't. They're like, it's really. I mean, you were saying it's lengthy. I mean, it's.
It was a double-sized issue.
Okay, I was going to say, I love Saga, but that was like, that felt like it had as much content as like an entire Saga trade.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be picking on Saga for having, you know, one issue. They're like, how are you feeling? And next issue, you find out how he's feeling, you know, kind of like. feels like sometimes they have that much content in those issues, but this had so much going on. Like at one point, I read it on digitally, so I didn't actually have the thing, so I couldn't feel how far things were going. But at one point, I was like, "Oh my god, there's more pages." I looked, I was like, "Oh my god, I'm only halfway through. Holy shit!"
Yeah, that was the same thing for me because I downloaded it right before bed, and I'm thinking, 10 minutes, and then like 30 minutes later, I'm like, "Oh, I'm finally done." I'm like, "Man, I want to read that again." That was great, and I feel like if I don't remember it, it's going to be because I didn't read it. I don't know. I was going to actually try to read it again before we started tonight, but I'm actually remembering more than I thought I might. So,
well, I downloaded it today and read it when I got home, so I just read it a couple hours ago. And, you know, a lot of times we talk about how little is in a number one. This thing was just, you know, like they've already said, I mean, it was full of all kinds of goodness. I mean, you find out more about the main character than you do in most books, I feel, you know, and you find out about his partner, you find out some weird murders that are happening, and you don't know why, you see some other weird creatures that you don't know what the hell they're doing. This was one of my favorite number ones in a very long time.
I agree.
Super intriguing, and there's no way I'm not going to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very well written. Like, I mean, it's not like
very sexy.
Yeah, there's no cheese ball lines, you know, like, that's a flash fact. You know, but but I mean, it. I don't know. I hands down one of the best ones I've read in a long time.
Yeah, I'm definitely
well,
gonna keep going.
Go that far, but
I am, and I'm. I was struggling last night. I'm like, man, I don't know if an 8.5 is too low. I mean, I guess I just sort of gave my score away, range away. But I was kind of like, I really like. I want to just, I'm like, I have to go to bed, but man, I should just read this again and then just go to work tired. Or bring it to work.
I go to work tired anyway, so.
Yeah, I do too.
Whatever.
But, no, prior to this, the only thing I've ever read from Fred Van Lente was an Archer and Armstrong trade, and that was just okay. But again, you know, when you're kind of.
I was going to say, he did Book of Death too, or I think he worked on one of
those. Those were terrible. The ones I all read were all terrible.
No, I remember you guys talking about those. Was that Valiant Comics?
Or? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of losing steam on my Valiant excitement.
Oh, dude, I stopped.
Although
I stopped
I'll admit,
months and months and months ago,
the new arc of Ninjak looks intriguing, but I'm not going to get back on it. So I'm Sweet. Still reading Bloodshot, and I'm finding it harder and harder to stick with it. So
yeah, I gave that up actually.
It's okay. It's not great.
It was fine, and it, well, whatever.
Yeah, I was gonna say let's if we're gonna switch topics, let's number it and switch. But
all right, whatever.
Well, unless you got anything to say, you haven't said much there, Christopher.
What do you want me to say?
I don't know. You can number it.
The dude getting flushed down the toilet was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty unexpected, huh? And the fact that it left like no traces. That was weird, too. The whole scenario.
There were so many great, like, reveals, felt like. And
I agree.
That was one of them, and I was really, like,
I kind of want to give it a low score, only because that dude did such a shitbag job on, like, you know, Book of Death.
That is the worst reason
Legend
ever.
Legend of Geomancer.
That is the absolute worst reason to give this a low score.
Yeah, everyone loves a redemption story. This could be his.
Well, I feel like, why couldn't you put that fucking same effort in those books, jackass?
Maybe he did.
Well, I guess I'll call Fred Van Lente and tell him not to come on the show next week.
Yeah, I know, right?
Good, do that. You do that.
Chris is still pissed at you.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to need a minute. And by a minute, I mean several months.
And I also kind of want to give it a low score only because Brian liked it so much.
Again, terrible reason.
Well, let's see what everyone.
You didn't like the fix. So.
Let's get my nephew in here to see what he thinks.
Well, let's see what everyone else thinks. Let's start numbering.
I'm giving it a 4.
All right, 4 from Chris. We'll just
no,
keep
I'm not. I'm not giving.
It. Nope, you're on mute.
Oh man, I kind of wanted you to stick with it.
No, it's the comic is definitely nowhere near a 4.
It's a 5.
No, I was gonna say a 9.
Nice.
That's what I said.
And that's what I'm going to say.
I feel like I've given away a few more nines, and reasonably speaking, I reasonably should be able to, but I'm going to stick with a nine. I thoroughly love this thing.
And I do want to say, like, it's feel like it's been a long time since we've had a 10, and it feels really good to get this close. You know what I mean?
The only thing I don't really like is I don't like the title, but I see how the title works.
I love the title. I love it. I love everything about it. Because I remember when you picked it, I was like, oh, I was looking at that last week, and I don't know why I didn't buy it. And then,
because I'm a jackass.
I'm super poor. That's why I didn't buy it. But hey.
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the beginning, I grabbed it because I thought it was going to be this, like noir, like kind of old school noir kind of thing. I think I was thinking a little bit about the shadow thing we did a few weeks ago.
That was
and how kind of how fun that was. And I was like, ah, it's probably gonna be something like that again, like some, you know, sort of like Nikki Spillane kind of thing. And then when I got into it, I was like, oh, fucking not at all.
It had a little bit, but not. Yeah, it was definitely just every like when you find out his true identity, I was like, this is so amazing. I love this.
Yeah, I would be shocked if this thing if someone wasn't already optioning this thing out.
That is exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, somebody.
It's kind of what Wolf should have been.
Oh, Wolf. You're talking about the Alish Cott book?
Yeah, because I mean, Weird Detective. I understand what it is. Sebastian is a detective of the weird cases. You know, like, or your unusual ones.
But I think it kind of works in the opposite direction, where he's just a weird detective. And
well,
I won't say why, but if you decide to buy it, you'll find out. And you'll love it.
But that's kind of how Wolf was, too. Like, but and I was just thinking about that, because I don't know why. I was looking at some of my comics, I looked at Wolf, and I'm like, man, I'm like, Alish Cott has, you know, he's steadily going on with Wolf, but yet he leaves away
Material.
His best work yet in the material off to the wayside.
I haven't seen anything from him in months. I know he's got something coming from Aftershock at some point, but I have no idea what that guy's up to.
Oh, you know, speaking of Aftershock, Marguerite Bennett has a new title coming out on Aftershock called Animosity.
I did see that.
And I want to get it just because of the title of it. Because I like that word, animosity. Because I have a lot of animosity for a lot of things.
That you do. Well, moving on. Well, before we move on, does anyone want to talk about this Old Guy Cranky article that Brian posted? Or does anyone know what it's about, even?
The article's about... I mean, the guy's complaining about... He complains about Trump a little bit, but he kind of uses comics to sort of... It's a little insulting, but well, he's also an older man, and he's talking about going from, like, you know, Dick Tracy novel comics in the 40s to, like, you know, finally reading, you know, fucking Catcher in the Rye or something like that. Although that was
didn't we talk about some kind of dude like this before?
That was the British guy. It's different. That guy was actually making fun of comics. This guy was just saying that our world is becoming. He's just complaining about people with their smartphones and all this stuff. It's a little Andy Rooney. About the
I'm just surprised people like actually like take the time to like whatever post these rants.
It's the Salt Lake City Tribune. I don't think there's much going on.
Oh, shit. Believe me, I know. I was just there not too long ago.
Yeah, it was again. It was literally. I could find nothing worth discussing.
This guy's complaining about people having an imagination and creativity.
Word bubbles now with their text messaging, and everybody does, you know, grown men are waiting in line for the new Avengers movie, and, you know, nobody's trying to tap into things that are culturally relevant, and this culture is disintegrating, and that's
like,
why Trump
culturally
is
relevant. What is his examples of culture?
He didn't really have any examples. He just
well,
went.
See, then he's got
he
nothing.
Went on. But I wasn't sitting there thinking like, oh, let's rip on this guy. I was more or less thinking, you know, are we idiots? I don't know.
I mean, honestly, in some ways, I don't disagree with him. It's just that, but he's in the because he's talking about how people in Idaho or people in Utah are going to clearly vote for. They call him like a a television entertainer as opposed to a clearly experienced politician. And I think he's like the Trump thing has finally pushed him over the edge. But I mean, like you said, like he's talking about Twitter and he's talking about social media and he's kind of using comic books as like the idea of it, like comic books being the easily consumable candy coated version of literature. And he's using it kind of in the pejorative that way. And I understand the point, but it only comes from someone who's clearly already out of touch. I mean, not only do I think comics, you know, and not just me, I mean, it's a lot of people who I think are of worth gives a lot of, you know, weight behind comics in general. But I mean, also tons of people are using social media in interesting ways, and there's things that are culturally relevant. And it's not like people are not going to museums. It's not like people are not painting. I mean, the stuff is still happening. It's just, you know, he's seeing, when he sees someone walk down the street looking at their phone, he's just like, God damn it, everyone's got their face in the phone. I mean, he doesn't know that person. He doesn't know what's going on. And he's just getting the same news feed the rest of the people who are going to be voting for Trump are getting. So it just seemed like someone who was out of touch complaining about how out of touch people seem to be.
Yeah, I think the general backlash against all things comic book related is swelling up now, and I don't think it's a general like comic books are bad thing so much as it is that there's just a
getting saturated.
No, it's a I feel like there's a general frustration with in the past 8 years. Nothing really of great significance has changed since, you know, the stock market went through the toilet. And because comic books have, like, risen from the ashes as this one thing that people have grabbed onto as a crest of positivity in some way, an escape from the harshness of what their
life.
Just like, you know, just the struggles of just trying to get through another week. And I'm not saying like, oh my God, existence is so hard. I'm just saying like bills and debt and, you know, all these things that are constantly going on, these shootings and the student loan crisis and all this stuff. And it's become the one thing that everybody gravitates towards to, you know, or at least it's not the one thing, but it's the one easy target. Because when, you know, the next Avengers movie comes out, everybody goes to see it. So I think his argument is that no one's exploring things with greater, deeper cultural value, etc.
Yeah, I just read it, so
I think it's just a general frustration that nothing's changing. These movies come out, everybody just turns their brain off, goes to see them, goes out, you know, they want to live that life, they want to escape to those worlds. And nobody cares about the world that's happening around them, which I completely and utterly disagree with. I feel like more people, and I'm not saying this is necessarily good, but I feel like more people have opinions on the things that are going on in the world right now than I can recall in the more recent past. A lot of it comes from my opinion, and I'm sure other people would say the same of me, comes from a place of selective information. Just listening to some of the people at work when they decide to just get up in front of the class and go off about what this guy said or what that group did or whatever, and it's just always like, oh my God, I need headphones. I just feel like that's where he was coming from, was essentially that nobody's paying attention to what's going around them, and that's why Trump is a thing, and that's why shootings in Orlando are a thing, and that's why ISIS is a thing. And I think that's just him being angry and looking for a simple way to kind of box it all in and go, this is the problem.
Right. And it's definitely more complicated than that.
It's just weird that how, like, I've been reading this that Glenn Weldon book, the Cape Crusade or whatever, and it's just weird how all these things that are popular in certain groups always get brought back into the ring of, you know, the spotlight of things that are the real reason why we can't have this, or the real reason why these problems exist. It's weird that comic books are there now, because, like, it was only a few years ago that video games were, and it's only a year or two away before something else takes its place, and, you know, the carousel of blame will just continue to go around.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's interesting when you made the point about how things have nothing's really like come since that last financial crisis. And I mean, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I think people, you know, are looking for things that are safe, not as challenging, because so much of us lost so much so quickly without any warning, and it could certainly happen again. And we haven't changed really anything for the better. I mean, there's maybe a few laws here or there. We have Elizabeth Warren in the Consumer Protections Bureau or whatever, which maybe is doing a little something here or there. But I mean, in general, like, we go with what's safe, and nostalgia is safe, and for these studios, doing comic book movies are safe, and I'm glad they do them. I love them. I'm super stoked on those things. I can't wait for, you know, Doctor Strange or whatever to come out. I'm totally going to see that. But I mean, I wonder if this guy is, I mean, if this, this, I think there's still really interesting, cool shit happening. I mean, is this guy going to go see Swiss Army Man? That looks like the totally fascinating movie, and the reviews are great so far. And
yeah, The Lobster sounds really interesting.
Yeah, Lobster is supposed to be really wonderful and such a cool idea and super crazy.
Tons of great shows on TV.
Yeah, I mean, television has definitely become like a much higher art form than movies. I mean, movies in a lot of ways are kind of one of the lowest art forms anyway. Even when it comes to storytelling, you get, I mean, on average movie, you get 90 minutes. You know, that first season of Daredevil, you got, what, 10 hours for a story? And normally we get, like, you know, 90 to 120 minutes to tell a similar story. It's crazy. I mean, in some ways, I'm kind of just, I don't know, kind of looking forward to what more is going to come from what we've been doing. I feel like there's going to be some garbage. I mean, of course there is. Humans are making it. It's not always going to be great. But,
right.
But I don't know. It's again, I feel like this guy's kind of out of touch, or maybe being a little selective about his observations. But I mean, that's going to happen because it's coming from his perspective, and that's how perspectives work.
Yeah, that's true. This is a big world. Not everyone is doing a comic book movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and just like anything else,
just choosing to focus all of it on that and say, oh, that's all they're doing. That's all they're doing.
And it's just like anything else, whether it has been from reading the thanks list on old heavy metal records, or skateboarding videos introducing me to new bands, or comic book writers talking about the authors that inspired them that in turn made me go to the store and pick up a Jim Thompson novel for the first time and go, oh, this is really great. Where do I get more? It's not as if like people, they get into comic books or they get into video games, and some do. Obviously, that's never going to be, you know, a universal thing where somebody finds something and then looks deeper for the influences and so on. But for me, and I'm sure for everybody here, you know, they read 100 Bullets and they read an interview with Brian Azzarello and he talks about Raymond Chandler, and you're like, oh, weird, I should get some Raymond Chandler. And then you just keep going and going and going. And the next thing you know, you're wearing a gopher costume and watching Belle du Jour in the house by yourself.
that is the next thing you know.
That is my weekend, so way too much information.
Sounds awesome.
Into it. Well, cool.
Well, alrighty. I guess speaking of old men complaining, let's get to complaining about some movies and over under.
Oh, do you want to hear the explanation though? Just
sure,
real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I'll try to make this quick. I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast. He's interviewing Bobcat Goldthwait. Bobcat Goldthwait says he wants to remake Billy Jack, but he wants to make Billy Jack a homosexual. And I was like, I've heard of Billy Jack. And he go on and he explained it. And I was like, I have to watch Billy Jack now. So I was watching videos on YouTube of Billy Jack, and my nephew was in the room, and he's asking me all these questions. And he had to go to his Little League game, and his mom is yelling at him, going, we got to be at the game. He's like, but I want to hang out with Uncle Brian and watch old man movies. And I was like, that's the best thing I ever heard. I don't know why. It just made me laugh. So there you go. Old man movies.
I'm into that. Yeah, Bobcat Goldthwait talked about Gay Billy Jack on Harmontown a few months back.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it sounds great.
I just bought Billy Jack. I still haven't watched it, but I'm super excited for the possibility of the homosexual Billy Jack movie.
Go back and find that Harmontown with Bobcat. he actually describes the opening and gives you some lines and like how it's going to break down, and it's great.
Was it the one where he's in a bar and he's like pouring a drink, and then the guy starts a fight and he like kicks everybody in the bar, and the next scene, him and the bartender are in bed post coitus.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I was dying. I'm like,
so this apparently he's actually fleshed it out a lot if he's actually mentioning it on other podcasts.
I need this movie like right now. Plus, I need to see Willow Creek because even though it's got like 4 stars on IMDb, I need to see it anyway. Anyway, that's the old man movie thing because I think it's hilarious that my nephew thinks that I'm an old man.
Well,
he's not wrong. He's really not wrong.
Okay, so this is going to be a super old man movie, but I mean it's going to fit. Back when we were regularly doing the movie roast, I used to try and pick some really old, quote unquote, classics that you should have seen. And one week I picked The Seventh Seal, and Brian and I sat down to watch this, and I don't know why it is so critically acclaimed. That movie was terrible.
It was really bad.
I mean, the cover and like the way it was explained, it looked, you know, it's like this guy and he's like playing chess with death, and I thought they were going to have this like 90-minute conversation about like life, and like he was going to try to beat death in some kind of a weird chess game to save his own life, and that's absolutely not what happened. It was so not good, and there was, I think, some carnies in there, some weird, like, trailer folk. I mean, it was not what I expected, and I'm pretty sure that we ripped it apart on the podcast.
I don't know that we ripped it apart. I mean, it had its moments. It had some really great ideas, but I feel like, some of the weird, goofy segments just ruined the tone of the movie. But it's an Ingmar Bergman movie, so of course it's going to be beloved because he's kind of a famous director. So I think certain directors get a little more leeway than others would. Like if that movie was made by Ed Wood, there's no way. But then if it was made by Ed Wood, Max von Sydow wouldn't have been in it.
It's funny. I've never seen it. It's always been on my list, and I'm less inclined to see it now.
Well, I mean, I don't want to dissuade you from watching it, but by all means, if you do, I would love to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah,
sure.
The first, like, 15 minutes are great, and then it just veers off into, like, weird. It feels like, you could tell Monty Python, they were satirizing that movie heavily when they made The Holy Grail.
Yeah, and I don't want to, like, harp on too much of, you know, whatever, but, like, another one that's, you know, an old movie that people talk about it is amazing, but I never saw that I finally watched was Citizen Kane, and yeah, that movie was amazing. Like, I was expecting, like, when someone tells me that it's a great movie, like, I'm expecting something better than what I saw with Seventh Seal. But Citizen Kane, on the other hand, there is a movie.
That was good.
Yeah, that was one of those movies, when I saw it, I was like, oh, I actually like this, and I know why I like it. Like, it's not just because I'm supposed to, I actually do.
Yeah. It was so good. And actually, the next one on the list that I'm going to eventually watch, as soon as I can find it, is The Dictator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That thing at the end, that quote that gets passed around a lot, is so good.
Right? Makes me want to see it. But moving on.
I have two on that list. Okay. Double Indemnity and Spartacus.
Are these overrated? I forgot where we're at.
Yes.
Okay.
I actually have two now for my overrated, because I thought of one on the way here. So I'll just kind of skim these really quickly. The first one is Fritz the Cat.
Nice.
I don't know if anyone's ever seen it.
I have not.
I own it.
It has befouled my brain. It's so bad. I wasn't really aware of Robert Crumb when I saw it, but I had been told about it for years growing up, and then we finally saw it, and we were like, yes, finally. And like 20 minutes in, we're like, how long is this? This is really bad. It's pretty much just a cat going around New York smoking pot and having sex with everything in sight. And then there's like all this weird psychedelic stuff, and he ends up in a factory or some weird thing. I don't know.
That's cool.
It sounds like it would be, but it's not.
Yeah, it should have been amazing, but it's, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's of its time. It's of its subculture, I guess. Just, I don't know, not my thing. But the other one I was going to say was The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman. Oh my! No, wait. Is that, was it The Graduate? With Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah. Yeah, with the plastics. I want to go
back there. Where he's like, where he's having his little tryst with his, with some older woman.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one. Yeah, that movie. I was so excited because it came on Netflix. I was like, I've heard so much about this. I've seen it spoofed a million times, and I like Dustin Hoffman, but that's not a good movie.
I don't think I've seen that since I was a grown-up. I have no idea actually what it's about. In fact, I often confuse it with Marathon Man. Well, when I think about The Graduate, I also often put scenes from Marathon Man in my head.
And I'm like, well, Kramer versus Kramer.
Exactly. So,
I just remember he's having his affair with that guy's wife, or it's like his dad's friend's wife, and then it shifts gears and he's like falling in love with that woman's daughter and she's going to marry some other guy, and the big wedding thing at the end that was spoofed in Wayne's World 2. I'm going to go ahead and say Wayne's World 2 did it better because it had Christopher Walken and what's her name when she was still acting? Ta Leone.
Yeah, I forget.
No, not Ta Leone.
Tia Carrera?
Yes, her. She's probably doing like Kung Fu Shark movies on Sci-Fi now.
Naked. Yeah,
oh, real quick, to go back to the Fritz the Cat thing for just a second. I think Crumb hates that, too. I don't know if you mentioned that. But
who?
Our Crumb, I believe, hates that as well.
Oh, he absolutely hates it. He kind of alluded that he was involved in the very beginning, and then he, I don't know if there was a creative rift, but he kind of backed off, and then when he saw it, he's like, oh, God, please don't tell anybody it was me.
Yeah, I think that and the Keep on Trucking thing he mentioned in that documentary as being like the two banes of his existence.
Yeah, and he's such a like weird, negative kind of person anyway. So, mm-hmm. I guess I remember reading something where when Terry Zwigoff was up for the Oscar for Crumb, Crumb was at the Oscars and he was like pacing around like back and forth. He was like, pull out of this thing. I don't feel comfortable. Like, I forget. Something to do with like he was like having severe panic attacks. Like he
that
didn't
like him.
Either he didn't want the movie to be recognized or he didn't want it to be put out or something. He was having all kinds of issues, I guess. I think he felt like he was being violated. But then if you read Drawn Together, it was pretty much like his day to day life, so
it's true.
Alright, Christopher.
Gone with the Wind.
Ooh.
Interesting. I've never seen that.
No, me neither.
I've heard it's horribly racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Huh. So just
I mean, how many times have you heard Frankly Scarlet, I don't give a damn, so it's like,
Isn't that Casablanca?
Yeah, it's a shitty movie.
See?
So you're saying don't watch it.
Nah.
Unless you want to hear derogatory and hear the black lady being called Mammy all the time.
Yeah, it's kind of gross. Maybe it had its time and place, and I mean, Civil War stuff, I guess, is kind of cool, but I don't know.
Yeah, I like Civil War. Like, I like any kind of like war things.
Yeah, I'm not into it.
Yeah, I can think of a ton of better movies, which I will say in my underrated.
I'll cop to the fact that I love Paths of Glory, but that's probably like the only war movie I can honestly say I love.
It's a good one. Written by Jim Thompson.
Yes. Yes, it was.
I can think of tons of other good war movies, like, what, The Great Escape?
Ooh, yeah, that's good too. I forgot about that one. That is a superb movie.
We're not there yet.
It's not my pick, but he's
no,
right.
No, but I'm just saying. I'm saying. Like, you know.
He's right, though.
And besides, Gone with the Wind's not really... It's just... the Civil War is a backdrop to what's, you know... Then what's really going on, and...
Well, we can actually move... We could actually move into... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and, you know, what its real intention was to, you know, ridicule African-Americans...
I'll take your word for it because I've not seen it, and now I won't be seeing it.
Well, I mean, you also got to take into consider. I mean, people consider it a classic because I think it's more like a romantic movie between. I forgot the two characters, but
Mammy
and
Pappy.
I understand because of the time, place, you know, the era. It's, well, I mean, you got to take in consideration when it was made, when it was written, and even go back, you know, that it's taking place during the Civil War, which, you know, we're not stupid. We all know what was going on and why the war got started to begin with.
I think one of the reasons the movie is so popular, too, is it's one of the first movies that had, like, that massive production. And I think it was also, I don't know, it wasn't the first color movie or anything, but it was in color, and it was giant, sprawling scenes and casts, and it was like a huge spectacle. It wasn't the first or anything, but it was like Titanic or something of its day. It was just this huge thing that, like, culturally affected everyone.
Yeah,
like, everyone saw it.
And Titanic sucks, too.
Oh, yeah, it's a bad movie.
Sweet. Okay, did you do an underrated or overrated, Damien?
You know, I didn't really, because the movie I picked I actually like.
Well, now I want to know what it is.
Right? It's intriguing.
Well, I like it. I actually don't even think it's necessary, because I couldn't really come up with one. I was having a hard time, because all the movies that I've actually gone out of my way to see, there hasn't been too many I haven't really enjoyed, like, for one reason or another. And so I was just trying to think of, like, the first movie that popped in my head when I thought a movie that someone would consider, like, my dad's movie. So I picked Bridge on the River Kwai, although I really like that movie. But I was thinking, in the beginning part of the movie, when, like, Alex Guinness and all the officers are being, like, punished, like, made to stay out, like, stand outside all day, it's because they don't believe they should have to do manual labor. Because that's part of the Geneva Convention. That's the whole thing where, like, the guy hits them with the Geneva Convention. And I was thinking, like, well, that's kind of a shitty reason to, like, you know, make things worse for everyone. again, not a bad. I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't think it's overrated. Really, it's quite good. I mean, the whistling gets a little annoying, but So that's just. I just kind of, like I said, picked the first thing that came to my mind because I have a tiny problem with the plot. It has nothing to do with the movie really at all.
You know, that is Ron Swanson's favorite movie.
Yeah. See, there you go. And I love that guy, that imaginary guy.
Yeah, I agree.
I have not seen that movie yet. Agreeing
with liking Ron Swanson.
Ron Swanson's good.
No, as I said, I think the movie's good. I like it. I just think there's some things in it that I thought were a little ridiculous plot-wise. But, I mean, you know, at the time, or even at the time it was supposed to be taking place, it probably made more sense. And, you know, they're British officers, so they're probably more about the rules than the Japanese that were keeping them in your prison camp or whatever. Anyway, you'll see it. You should watch it. It's great.
I'm gonna watch it now.
Alex Guinness, Obi-Wan Kenobi is the main character. It's awesome.
Into it.
Well, if Ron Swanson likes it and you like it, I'm gonna go ahead and say I'm gonna have to watch it.
Well, sweet. Well, this underrated might seem a little not underrated because it was, you know, critically acclaimed. It won Oscars and it's, you know, it's well liked. But I feel like it doesn't get talked about nowhere near as much as it should compared to other movies from the time. And I'm going to go with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's an amazing movie that I feel people just kind of forgot about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's great. I think it's because Jack Nicholson became a figure that hosts movies instead of an actor, because he was great in that.
Right. Well, like, you figure it. That was right around the time of The Shining, but everyone's... What?
It was like 5-6 years before.
Yeah, still, in the grand scheme, we're talking 30, 40 years later. It was right around there. People still talk about that. You know what I'm saying? People talk about a lot of movies from that time, but as critically acclaimed and well-received as that movie was, I just feel like you don't really hear about it.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, boast, but I think, like, our generation is kind of like the last generation to really explore that movie. And I feel like maybe you're kind of onto something in terms of, like, the generations that are coming up behind us either haven't gotten there yet or just going to gloss over it altogether.
That's a fantastic. That's like, I was pleasantly surprised the first time I watched it of how much I liked it. And I bought the digitally remastered Blu-ray and I still put it on at least, what, twice a year, maybe. It's a great movie.
Yeah, it is. I mean, how much longer can you make a Nurse Ratched reference and have people understand what that means?
No. I know, right? It's kind of sad.
She won an Oscar for that too, didn't she?
If not, she was at least nominated. I did just see something.
So
about
between
her,
that though. And High School High, she really nailed it.
Yeah, big time.
All right. Well, I was initially going to pick the one Chris said a little bit ago, The Great Escape, but I decided to go a little bit deeper. Smidge. There's a million movies I could have picked, but I'm going to stick to The Getaway with Steve McQueen.
I feel like anything Steve McQueen.
Based on a Jim Thompson book.
Yes.
I feel like anything Steve McQueen can't really be underrated. I feel like everyone loves everything that guy does.
I don't think anybody even really knows
what
he exists.
What did you pick?
The Getaway with Steve McQueen Slim Pickens and I forget the guy's name. Sally Struthers is in it.
I'll give you some Slim Pickens.
Well,
not the ridiculous remake with Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger.
I choose to ignore the fact that movie exists.
It's super bad. I watched it.
But I don't think anybody really talks about Steve McQueen much anymore, but I kind of feel like his big movies were like The Magnificent Seven, The Great Escape.
Bullet,
yeah. I like Bullet, but The Getaway is just... That's his best movie, I feel like. That's such a just amazingly good movie. That movie just makes me want to rob a bank and drive all over New Mexico.
Sweet. You there, Chris?
Yep.
Do you have something?
Got a couple, man.
Really?
Yeah, why?
To bring me
I had a couple too, but I cut it. But if you're going to go more, then I'm going to add one later.
Is Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia one of them?
Nope.
Oh, that's pretty good too.
Robin Hood with Errol Flynn.
I've never seen it.
I like that movie a lot.
I have never. The only Robin Hood I've ever.
I also like Ben-Hur a lot too.
I've never seen that.
You're stupid.
I feel like Ben-Hur is like still kind of popular, or maybe it's just because my uncle.
Well, they're gonna remake it, and it's gonna look like it's gonna be shitty. So
yeah, you don't know that.
I do know that.
It's gonna be terrible.
It is.
Wow, you know The Rock's gonna be in there.
Vin Diesel will be in there. There'll be a Minotaur for no reason.
I also like From Russia with Love a lot too.
I can get down with some old James Bond.
I always get down with old James Bond because, man, what a life. Drive awesome cars, kill people, and have sex with lots of women.
I almost wonder...
Exactly.
No, there was somebody's lighting dynamite around here for some stupid reason.
Well, because you live in Hillbilly Central.
That's true. No, I almost wonder if they got the, like, James Bond making out with every woman he comes within 5 feet of, if they got that from Kiss Me Deadly, because in that movie, Mike Hammer literally just walks in a room and a woman goes, "Hi, I'm Diane," and then they start making out.
It's cool to watch those movies because, like, especially, like, in the 60s, like, you actually get to see how popular smoking really was.
Oh, my God. It was.
Can I add another one, then? I'll let you
go ahead. Oops.
It's probably not underrated.
Do it.
It's probably not underrated, but I'm going to throw
it. I
don't
think mine are underrated. You know what the weird thing is about you picking this is any old man movie that we pick as underrated is probably not because it's probably a timeless classic.
Sure you're right.
They are, but I feel like, again, I feel like the generations coming up behind us are, these movies are going to start moving further and further into the distance, and they're going to start becoming... movies that, like, I almost feel like they're going to become museum pieces at some point, where people are going to be like, oh, that was a movie, wasn't it? Weird. Ghostbusters, huh? Not that Ghostbusters is in the same arena of movies. I just feel like the younger generation is not going to delve deep into the 70s, 60s, and even earlier that often.
And you know what other movies I really... You know what... It's actually good that you picked this because anytime I see any of those kind of old movies on TV, it always takes me back to like when I was a kid. Because remember, like on Channel 7, like this is back in the 80s, where like at 11:30 at night they would play some like old fucking movie that like only your parents knew about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Friday night, Saturday night movies.
Friday night or Saturday night. I remember that. they'd play some kind of like, you know, movie like that. And usually what it was is like Sinbad and, you know, I don't know, one of his fucking voyages. And I like the fucking, I like the special effects of like when the fucking Minotaur or the Cyclops would come out. Yeah. Well, as a kid, I thought it was cool.
Well, it was kind of an event almost still. We were like the last group to have like those after school, like evening primetime events where they'd be like, Clash of the Titans is on at 7. And you'd be like, oh my God, it's going to be the best. Because, you know, maybe every fifth house on your block had a VCR at that point.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like you were going to the movies every day. And that was like the way to discover old movies.
It's funny you say that, because Clash of Titans had fucking 70s, 60s fucking special effects in it.
Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, yeah, with that guy. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. That guy, didn't he just die not that long ago?
Within the last few years, I think, yeah.
Who did?
Ray Harryhausen. He's the stop-motion guy.
He made all that stuff look so awesome.
It is pretty good.
You know what else is funny about Clash of the Titans, now that you think about it, now that you mention it? I don't know if any of you guys played God of War. I did, though.
And the first one.
Okay. Well, in the second one, God of War, you have to fight Perseus. And just to go off the track a little, I think I woke up one time, and it was like a work day. It was like a work night, too. I think I woke up at 3 in the morning, and I'm like, I have to play fucking God of War. This is God of War 2. So I got up, and I started playing it until about maybe 5:36, and I decided to get ready for work. This was also the day before 4th of July. But anyways, so you fight Perseus, and I whooped his ass. And the guy that did the voice of Perseus in God of War 2 was the same dude from Clash of the Titans that played Perseus.
Nice. Oh, nice. That nerdy little detail I like.
Yeah. But anyways, that was it.
Sweet. All right. Damien, you got yours?
Yeah, I just, I picked a movie that I rented in the last year. I had this thing where we still have a video store up the street, and we'll go up there.
They still have those?
Yeah, they got, the ones here, they're like, there's two of them. There's one called Scarecrow Video.
You mean you gotta actually go in there and get your movie?
Yeah, it's great.
You can't download it to your computer?
Well, Scarecrow Video is actually a non-profit now. They're considered almost more of an archive. And there's, I like to be able to stream. But streaming's kind of bullshit, because essentially you're having, like, a company curate what you can watch. Like, I'm like, oh, sweet, there's something decent on Netflix. That's awesome. I'm going to totally watch it. Netflix rules. But in reality, like, if streaming was actually great, anything you want would be there. I mean, anything. There'd be no fucking, there'd be no, like, oh, this is only available on this one VHS tape. I mean, there's so much shit out there as many movies as exist, there's still 1,000 times more that are available to watch. And if you want to see some of these crazy things, you got to go find them. You got to find physical copies. Some of them weren't even put on DVD. And so we have two. There's Scarecrow Video, and then there's another one called Rain City Video. And I go to Rain City Video because it's right up the street. And they just have, tons of crazy obscure shit in there, mixed in with all the new stuff. I mean, some people, Seattle has a weird contingent of people who are kind of a little more off the grid than some others. Like, there's so many tech people here that I think a lot of the tech people here are just like, well, I don't have internet at home. Like, I don't do that. I have it at work. I don't use it at home. I know I have a few friends that actually do that. So if they want to see something, they actually have to go rent it or borrow it from someone. So I was doing a thing where every Thursday and Friday Wednesday and Thursday at this place, they have 2-for-1, so you get something free. And so I would always just rent a film noir as my free movie every week. And I found some awesome movies, but the one I picked up that I really, really loved is called Blast of Silence. And, I mean, Criterion re-released it, so I don't know exactly if I can necessarily call it underrated, but most people I know have never heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's great. It's one of those ones where the main character is kind of the killer, It's just awesome. So you're following around the psycho. It's reading... When you guys kind of introduced me to all the cool Brubaker shit, this is what that like stuff is based off of. Like, this is that this could have definitely been like a criminal story.
I gotta get this movie.
Yeah, I would check out Blast of Silence. And if you get the DVD, there's this cool little the Criterion one has another great thing about DVDs is all the extra shit that's on them.
Yep.
Like that was such an awesome thing that kind of streaming's just sort of killed. So now you have these people, you know, watching things having they don't necessarily get to have all the extra context that kind of shows you how much of an art this thing really is. But there's this awesome like short 30-minute documentary about the guy who made it, and they go back to all the scenes from Blast of Silence like 30 years later or whatever, because I think it was made in the 90s. And they show you like the same scenes from the same angle, like how New York's changed. So it's all about New York, and it's great. It's super great. So I'd say that's definitely one of my favorite film noir movies of all time, and I'd totally recommend it. I think I can't remember the name of the director right now, but I think it's the only movie like that he ever did. Like, it's considered this, through some people, it's considered this like amazing art house noir movie, and people are just shocked that he never did another one like it. So I absolutely recommend that movie. And I think if you have Hulu, is it Hulu? They have all the Criterion movies streaming.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so if you have Hulu, you can watch it there. But I do recommend getting the DVD. If I don't know if Hulu has the extra stuff on it.
Well, I know, like, if you buy a digital movie on the PlayStation Network, I know you get all the extras with it.
Yeah, but their library is pretty much all mainstream movies. And
oh, yeah. I'm just saying. Like, I was surprised when Max came over and put on Deadpool that it had the cut scenes, it had everything. The making of...
Yeah. You know, I'm actually getting rid of Comcast, but I bought Deadpool, and they had all that stuff on there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, maybe a year or two ago, I stopped buying DVDs for a while because I figured everything's on Netflix. And then as Netflix started taking things away and putting them back and so on and so forth. But yeah, as they started taking movies off and putting them back, I got frustrated because I'd be like, I was going to watch that. Now it's gone. So I started slowly buying DVDs again. And yeah, it's nicer to just go and grab the disc and have it. Plus, like, half-price books, they always have, like, their two or three shelves of all clearance DVDs, and they're all a dollar. And, I mean, you're going to rent it for $2, or you can own it for a dollar, and if it sucks, you can sell it right back. That's how I got L.A. Confidential. That's how I got Billy Jack, and I think I bought, like, a Planet of the Apes movie for a dollar from there. Their dollar bin is, like, the perfect place to get movies you want to see and don't want to spend a lot of money for.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, someday streaming will be awesome, where everything will be available, and I can't wait for that day. But yeah, in the meantime, you're gonna have to do stuff like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
I actually like. I mean, it's ridiculous that I buy movies still, but I just like to own them, even though I know I'm gonna watch it like once every 3 years.
Okay. Well, I'm just gonna scratch the rest of mine because I don't want to sit here and keep boring people with movie talk. So. I guess we'll just move this into best thing ever. I've got a list here, and I've just been picking off of it, and this one's been a while on here, so I'm going to go with this week. I recently finished the BBC Earth Africa documentary on Netflix. It's maybe only 8 to 10 episodes, and each episode focuses on a different part of the continent and the wildlife and, you know, the nature and of the area, and it was super interesting, and I think everybody should check that out.
I will. I love that stuff.
Yeah, I was looking for something not too story-driven to kind of just put on before bed, so for about 2 weeks, I just learned about Africa. It was pretty neat, and it made me want to go there.
It's hot, and they have animals that we don't have here.
Yeah, that's why. Well, I mean, I don't really care for the heat, but I definitely am a fan of animals.
You are an animal.
Yeah, you're about to see it when we play Overwatch in 20 minutes.
Yeah!
Yikes.
Giggity.
Do you play the monkey?
I do sometimes. I'm terrible with them. But I did watch a video today where everybody on the team was the monkey, and they destroyed
Winston.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was asking Chris earlier in the messenger, if he watched that video I sent him, because...
You must have sent it to my other email.
I sent it to your Gmail, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, all six guys were Winston, and they won the match in like 45 seconds. It was amazing. But anywho, enough about that, I guess.
Don't you wish you could be a part of that, Brian?
He's shoe shopping right now.
No, I'm actually looking to buy that Blast of Silence movie.
Wow.
Burst of Silence CD.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, my best thing ever is not happening right now, but I'm hoping it does in the near future. It was last year when around this time when Barnes & Noble did their half-off all Criterion movies DVD.
Was it really that long ago?
Oh, yeah, because the here's the thing. Oak Brook is like kind of a super rich area, and they have a Barnes & Noble that I will fully cop to the fact that it rules. It's like four times the size of every
Oak
other
Brook
one.
Oak Brook is right next to Elmhurst. Actually, I'm going to be like right at the border of it.
But the Barnes & Noble there not only is humongous and has a larger section of everything than every other Barnes & Noble I've ever been in, but the guy that works in the movie and music section there sounds exactly like the movie phone guy. So when he talks, he enunciates very, like, in a pronounced manner. So he's like, "Hello, welcome to Barnes & Noble." And I'm doing a terrible rendition of it, but yeah. This guy's voice is amazing. No,
on
you
the
should.
Wings of the Dove, for sale, $6.99.
I should totally record this guy because he's amazing, and I
is
like
he doing a bit or is it?
No, it's just how he talks. So I like to. I ask him tons of questions just so he'll keep talking.
Of course.
I'll be like, "Well, what about this movie? Have you heard of this actor? Let me tell you about that guy." Blah. For 20 minutes, I'm like, "This guy is so great. I want to take him home."
Kind of like unrelated. But what's your favorite limerick?
Kind of like Captain Kirk at Denny's over here.
Captain Kirk at Denny's?
The guy that sounds like, what's his face off the old TV show?
How the hell? I have no idea who you're talking about.
For real? Over here in Mokena? The Denny's? The guy that comes over and takes your order like this.
I don't have a clue who you're talking about.
Oh my God. We're going to Denny's this weekend.
Great.
He's been working there for like 20 years.
I'm super excited.
Whatever. Mike will know what I'm talking about.
But yeah, when they have their half-off sale, I'm going to go see that guy again because he's the best. And I'm going to buy like 20 movies. All at different times, though, so I could see him as much as possible.
That is great.
So, are you there, Chris?
Yeah, I'm right here, dude.
All right, best thing ever.
I don't really have one.
For someone who has such an awesome life, you never
have
anything.
Oh, shut up. I don't know what makes you think, like, I'm rich and, like, I have all this money and... You guys are dongs.
Oh.
I'm not rich, Damien. I don't have a big house. I don't have all this wealth.
Hopefully I'll be out there soon enough and we can... I'll be the judge of that. I do really want to come out, hopefully, this coming year sometime.
That'd be fun.
I want to make that happen.
Sweet. All right, well, then, Chris, since cool. Chris doesn't prepare ever, why don't you go ahead, Damien?
I do prepare.
I guess for me, it was that, I mean, I was really happy to have the UrbanCraft Uprising go so well, and I was also really happy that Pride festivities in Seattle and around the country went so smooth considering what happened in Orlando. So I think it was just I feel sort of a relief that this last weekend was just full of so much positive, cool, fun shit as far as my life is concerned. I have a ton of stress off my shoulders. I'm still a bundle of nerves, of course, but definitely better than I have been lately. And again, like Pride just being such a cool, positive, fun thing in our city was great. And, you know, no assholes did anything horrible to anyone, as far as I could tell. Well, actually, that's not fully true. I went up to Capitol Hill, which is kind of like what we consider like our gay neighborhood in Seattle. And I was walking to go to a bachelor party that I put on. And on the way, I passed a guy sitting on the sidewalk. It looks like he had the front of his face removed and he was just covered in blood. But I don't think it had anything to do with him being gay or anything. I think he just got in a fight with someone very, very, very big.
And you just kept walking? Or
there was cops there. I wasn't like, fuck that guy. I mean, he was being taken care of.
Okay. Just
no, if it was just him, I would have stopped and been like, hey, what can I do to stop all of the water coming out of your face? But no, there was cops and an ambulance there already. But it was, I mean, he was... I actually noticed the blood before I noticed him, because I was like, oh shit, what's all over the sidewalk? Wow. And then I, you know, a couple more feet, I was like, oh fuck, that guy's like completely destroyed.
Wow.
So but he was coherent in speaking, so I don't know. it's just crazy. It looked like something really bad happened. Like, it looked like he jumped off a building and then was, but somehow lived. So it was rough. But the best thing ever is the fact that in general, I feel like things went really well and it was a good positive thing. And on top of that, I had heard 99% Invisible replayed a audio documentary, I think it came out in the 90s, explaining why Pride Weekend is the weekend it is, and all about the Stonewall Tavern and what had happened and what that had done for gay rights and what it had been like to be gay before Stonewall. And it's really cool perspective and super informative, and I definitely recommend it. Check that out. Whatever the most recent 99% Invisible was, I think it's just called Remembering Stonewall. And like I said, if you don't know where Pride, why Pride is in June, or what Stonewall is, or any of that stuff, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's about half hour and it's super informative.
Works for me. Still got nothing, Chris?
Nope.
All right, moving on then. So yeah, that's gonna wrap us up for the week. So don't forget to follow me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can follow Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can follow Chris at SkateXEdge, and you can follow Damien at Damien Johnston. Don't forget to check out ReviewAndRoast.com to buy all your movie tickets, read all our reviews, listen to all our podcasts. Find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/ReviewAndRoast, and we will see you next week.